Blog Talk Radio.
Today, but needless to say, as promised, I got the long, detailed breakdown of yesterday's shooting happening today. You'll know who the perpetrator is. Unfortunately, we don't have that much information on the victims yet, but I have a story of a hero who was involved in this, who fought back. I have Obama's reaction, which was sharp. He was pissed. And he asked for some numbers, so we're going to give the numbers, and they are fucking overwhelming, as I'm sure most of my audience knows already, depending on how long you've been listening to the show. I feel like every time there's a mass shooting, well, we do it with terrorist attacks too, but that's separate. Whenever there's a mass shooting, we always trot out these stats that are just fucking mind-blowing, man. Then we got, a little later on in the show, we have another Planned Parenthood facility is attacked. There you can use the T-word, because it is that. We have Republicans in Alabama putting their middle finger directly in the face of black people, which is something that Alabama Republicans have been doing roughly forever. God, it's so fucked up. If you're a black person living in the South, it's almost amazing that they haven't started doing, like, terrorist attacks against Republicans. Because nonstop, all throughout American history, they've just been fucking put down and held back and officially kept as second-class citizens. The story today, you might say, Kyle, you're going way too far with this. The story today is fucking mind-blowing with how in-your-face they are with their racism and their anti-democratic sentiment and their need to try to hold on to power even though demographics are changing. And then also later on, Benjamin Netanyahu pulls a classic Benjamin Netanyahu at the UN and makes himself look like a fucking jackass. And are we going to have any, I don't know, happy stories today? I don't know about happy ones, but we do have ones that feel good in the pit of your stomach when you watch it. You go, oh yeah, that worked out nicely. Joe Rogan kind of fucking schooled Milo Yiannopoulos, who is a writer for Breitbart. Now this guy, I mean, he does some, I guess there's some things that he does that are decent, like he's against the PC crowd. I'm against the PC crowd, as you guys know. But he also happens to be, unfortunately, a right-wing crazy person in many ways, and Joe Rogan just exposed his silliness. So we'll play that clip for you, and we got all that stuff and much more. Let's kick it off here, and unfortunately, we start with the biggest downer, which is the shooting. Let's get into some of the details of that. There was another mash. The word is mass, Kyle. Let's try that again. There was another mass shooting yesterday at an Oregon community college. As of right now, the New York Times is reporting that 10 people are dead. So it was 9 for a while, but I guess somebody died from the injuries soon after. So as of right now, 10 people are dead, and there are many more that are injured as well. Unfortunately, at this point, we don't know much about the victims yet, but some details have emerged about the shooter. So Raw Story reports the following, quote, he's been named as Chris Harper Mercer, a 26-year-old who lived with his mother at an apartment only a few miles from the college. He was born in England and moved to the U.S. at a young age. He appears to have left an online footprint that hints at interest in mass shootings. He was active online. His uploads include PDFs of the occult magazine Phenomena and conspiracy-themed documentaries that include Lost Secrets of the Illuminati. He also blogged. One of the posts was titled, "The Material World is a Lie." In that, he said the following, quote, "Most people will spend hours standing in front of stores just to buy a new iPhone, to be like that, always concerned about what clothes I had, rather than whether or not I was happy, but not anymore. Since then, I have learned the truth that such attachments are falsehoods and will only bring misery." So he appeared to warn online beforehand that he was going to do this. And it was on the site 4chan. So on his various social media profiles, he described himself as the following: a conservative Republican, a conspiracy theorist, an opponent of organized religion. But at the same time as that, I should note that he's also a spiritualist and a believer in the occult. So, I mean, that kind of in and of itself is like a religion if you believe in the occult. He targeted Christians in this attack also, so that might help explain that. He hated organized religion, but he was a spiritualist and believed in the occult. So that was one of the key facts during the shooting, that he targeted Christians. He never had a girlfriend, and apparently he was looking for one. And he also had an obsession with the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, which is weird because, again, he describes himself as a conservative Republican. The IRA had outwardly Marxist sympathies. So what's the overall verdict when you look at it, when you look at what his possible motives are? My response is, I think it's all relevant, and this is very similar to the Vester Flanagan situation not that long ago, the person who shot the reporter live on air. I think that all of the information is relevant here, but the biggest factor, in my opinion, in this particular shooting is that I do think he's a crazy person. I do think he's unbalanced. And the reason I say that, and the reason why I'm not pinning it on any specific ideology, is that he's all over the place, and his ideologies just flat-out contradict themselves. So he loves the IRA. They're left-leaning, essentially, even though they were a militant organization. But he's a conservative Republican. Okay, so what does that mean? I don't know which one would are you doing this for. Again, he's a conspiracy theorist. Does that play a role in this? Possibly. He believed in the occult. Does that? Yeah. Can we get Freudian with this and say, hey, he didn't have a girlfriend. He was looking for a girlfriend. We all know what happens when, you know, young guys who are at that time in their life want attention from the opposite sex and they're not getting it. The result is never fucking good. Does that play a role in it? Maybe that plays a role in it as well. I think all of the facts are relevant and all of them probably pushed in this direction. I can't pin it on one in particular, but to me, the one that seemed like it was more overriding, I should say, to the other factors was that he really did seem like he was unbalanced, and he praised other mass shooters, and in his blog posts, he wrote stuff like we just went through about how the material world is not worth living in, and, you know, I've broken free from that, and now I know that that stuff is all irrelevant, and it just seemed like he was a social outcast, and he was really awkward, and he probably needed intense psychiatric help. So here are some other important facts to bring up about the shooting here. Mother Jones reports, quote, "As the sheriff in Douglas County, Oregon, John Hanlon was front and center following Thursday's shooting at Umpqua Community College, which left 10 dead and 7 others wounded. 2 years ago, Hanlon was one of hundreds of sheriffs around the country to vow to stand against new gun control legislation. In a January 15, 2013 letter to Vice President Joe Biden, he wrote, gun control is not the answer to preventing heinous crimes like school shootings." Now, also on top of that, people are incorrectly calling this school a gun-free zone. It was not a gun-free zone. The student code of conduct doesn't allow guns, quote, without written authorization, but it's very important to mention that under Oregon law, since this is a public school, it can't ban people with a license from bringing their gun on campus. And a 2011 court decision found that and upheld that, and there indeed was another guy on campus with a gun during the shooting. So this idea of, oh no, if only we everybody had a gun, it would have worked. Nonsense, utter nonsense. Guns are allowed on campus in many circumstances, and somebody on campus had a gun and it didn't prevent this. So we're also getting more and more unsettling information. Like, for example, the sheriff, apparently maybe a Sandy Hook truther, conspiracy theorist as well, because he shared a video way before this happened about that online. You probably don't want that guy leading the investigation. And when they just recently searched this guy's house, just before we came on air here, apparently he had 13 guns, all purchased legally. So President Obama came out and gave a fiery speech in response to another mass shooting, and he made some great points. And bottom line is, man, we're going to keep seeing this until we do something. Now, you guys know, they might strawman us and say, oh, they want to do gun confiscation, and they're in favor of taking away our rights and our civil liberties. That's nonsense. I know of very few people on the left who have ever called for that. There are some who say gun confiscation, but number one, you can't do that. And number two, the overwhelming majority of us are just saying moderate gun reform, some moderate new safety laws, like a universal background check. As of right now, 40% of gun purchases don't have a background check associated with them whatsoever. Now, I'm not saying, and nobody's saying, that if we had a universal background check, for example, that this shooting wouldn't have happened. No, you can almost never say in specific cases whether or not a certain gun law would have prevented it. But what we do know is the macro statistics do drop tremendously when you have smart gun laws in place. That you can't. That's irrefutable, guys. And we're talking about when you look at the U.S. and our lax gun laws versus look at a place like Britain or Australia or Japan, who has the strictest gun laws. I don't want to go as far as them, where they basically ban them. But you look country to country or modern nation to modern nation, and you find out very quickly the places that have stronger gun laws have less gun violence. So this idea that the right has come up with that if everybody has a gun, everybody's more safe, that's just flat out not true. It's based in the world of theory. And that's the problem with almost all their arguments, is that they're anti-empirical. So it's easy to come up with something that sounds plausible. It's easy to say, well, there are more good people than bad people in the world. So if you give everybody a gun, since the good people outnumber the bad people, therefore the bad people will be kept in check by the good people, and more guns is better. Okay, that's a theory. But how do you test a theory? You actually look at the data, and when you look at the data, you find out, according to a Harvard meta-analysis, which went through all the credible studies on this, they found very quickly the more guns there are, the more gun violence there is. So your theory is just not true. And then whenever we point that out, what do? They go into a tap dance, and then they just parrot their theory over. No, I know, but I just refuted your theory. You don't get to respond by bringing up the same theory. It might sound plausible at face value, but it turns out it's not correct. So you need to come up with a better fucking argument. But they don't bother, because in their mind, the argument is always more guns. So let's face it, there are many, many more people out there like this. We don't know. I mean, the motives can vary across the board. You can have terrorist attacks, and it can be done in the name of Christianity. It can be done in the name of Islam. It can be done in the name of a far-right ideology. It can be done in the name of Marxism. You know, you go down the list, or it could just be not terrorism and a mass shooting with a psychopath who's shooting. And bottom line is, we live in a world where there are a decent number of crazy people, and they have easy access to guns. We need to try to make it harder for them to get a gun, and if we don't do that, this is going to happen over and over and over. Okay. Now we're going to get into more specifics here. I actually want to do President Obama's speech next, and then, God, I have numbers pouring out of my nostrils at the end of his comments here. And they're pretty long and they're pretty thorough, so I think it's like a 3-minute clip. So just a warning, you're going to be hearing Obama talking a lot. All right, let me set this up for you properly. Obama gave a speech in response to yesterday's mass shooting, and he was pissed. Let's listen.
are not the only country on earth that has people with mental illnesses who want to do harm to other people. We are the only advanced country on earth that sees these kinds of mass shootings every few months. And earlier this year, I answered a question in an interview by saying, the United States of America is the one advanced nation on earth in which we do not have sufficient common sense gun safety laws, even in the face of repeated mass killings. And later that day, there was a mass shooting at a movie theater in Lafayette, Louisiana. That day. Somehow this has become routine. The reporting is routine. My response here at this podium ends up being routine. The conversation in the aftermath of it, we've become numb to this. We talked about this after Columbine and Blacksburg, after Tucson, after Newtown, after Aurora, after Charleston. It cannot be this easy for somebody who wants to inflict harm on other people to get his or her hands on a gun. And what's become routine, of course, is the response of those who oppose any kind of common sense gun legislation. Right now, I can imagine the press release is being cranked out. We need more guns, they'll argue. Fewer gun safety laws. Does anybody really believe that? There are scores of responsible gun owners in this country. They know that's not true. We know because of the polling that says the majority of Americans understand we should be changing these laws, including the majority of responsible law-abiding gun owners. There is a gun for roughly every man, woman, and child in America. So how can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer? We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work will just make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence. We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to prevent it. And of course, what's also routine is that somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize. It is relevant to our common life together, to the body politic. I would ask news organizations, because I won't put these facts forward, have news organizations tally up the number of Americans who've been killed through terrorist attacks over the last decade, and the number of Americans who have been killed by gun violence. And post those side by side on your news reports.
Let's do just that. All right, so what we see here is terrorism deaths versus gun-related deaths in the U.S. Terrorism deaths in the United States in the year 2014, there were a total of 18. Now, you can bicker over that number a little bit and say, well, this one should have counted as terrorism and it didn't, this one shouldn't have and it did, or whatever. But ballpark, you can say about 18 terrorism deaths in the year 2014. How about terrorism deaths in the U.S. from 1970 to 2014? 3,521. Now, as you can see there, gun violence deaths in the U.S. just in 2015! 8,512. So, the bottom line is, if you are more concerned about terrorism at the moment in America you are empirically incorrect in what you're concerned about. Now, you can make the argument, well, you know, we're afraid that ISIS will get a nuke somehow and then plant it in Toledo, Ohio, and that's a different conversation. But the bottom line is, when you look at the data today, it doesn't matter how far back you go in U.S. history, you are overwhelmingly more likely to get killed because of the easy availability of guns than you are because of terrorism. And that goes for all kinds of terrorism. That goes for Muslim terrorism, right-wing terrorism, you name the kind of terrorism, and you're much more likely to be killed by your garden variety psychopath with easy access to a gun. It's an uncomfortable fact of reality that people don't like to admit because it doesn't coincide with the way the media covers it and the way that we're raised to think. It's easy to fear the violence of the other. Ooh, it's foreign and it's different and they have the intent to harm. And you can go down a laundry list of the reasons why we fear violence that statistically isn't as probable. But what I'm begging my audience to do, and I think you guys have already done this because by and large I think you're very smart, is just to accept the facts of reality and to understand that, you know, arguments from narratives are not correct by default. Someone, oh my God, the scary Muslim terrorists are coming. Okay, but let's look at the numbers and see what the biggest threat is to you in your life. I mean, you're much more likely to die from police brutality in America than you are to die from a Muslim terrorist, or any terrorist, but for that matter. So it's really important to know this. Now, I want to get into more numbers here so you really see the scope of the problem if this doesn't already illustrate it. The Sandy Hook shooting was in December 2012. How many people have died from gun violence in America since then? You ready for this? This is from Slate. Quote, using the most recent CDC estimates for yearly deaths by guns in the United States, it is likely that as of today, roughly 99,019 people have been killed. So just from Sandy Hook until today, 2012 until today, 99,000 people have died from gun violence in America. Now understand, that's all-inclusive. So that means homicides, that means suicides, that means accidents, that means all of the gun deaths in America from then until now. But that number's fucking overwhelming. It's fucking overwhelming. When you just look at murders, so gun murders, that number every year is between 8 and 10,000. It's an overwhelming number. Now, to put that in perspective further, in the Korean War, 54,246 Americans died. So we've had more than a Korean War on our own soil since Sandy Hook. All right, more. How about in the Revolutionary War, how many people died? 25,000. Are you kidding me? We've had basically four Revolutionary Wars since Sandy Hook on our own soil because there's fucking guns everywhere and a lot of crazy people. All right, how about in the War on Terror, how many Americans died? 6,717. You do the math on that. How many War on Terrors have we had at home simply because there's over 300 million guns? And in Vietnam, 58,209 American soldiers died. We've had more than a Vietnam on our own soil, almost two Vietnams on our own soil, since Sandy Hook, which was not that long ago. I remember reporting the story. So, I mean, this is unbelievable. 36 gun deaths on average happen every day in America. If your response is to do nothing, I question your intelligence. Like, it's one thing to disagree with the specific policy solutions that Obama wants or I want or anybody else on the left wants. It's another thing completely to say, I don't want to do anything about it. Well, okay, then next time you want to fearmonger about how bad Islamic terrorists are, be consistent and shut the fuck up. I believe I have a right to any gun ever, and this is the price of freedom for 32,000 people or so to die every year. Okay, well then, why are you not talking about the price of freedom in the face of other enemies, like foreign terrorists? You don't say, oh my God, take away our Fourth Amendment rights and let's invade every country there is. You're not being objective, you're not being consistent in the way that you reason about this. And finally, let me just address some of Obama's points there. To his politicizing point, it's very similar to a point I made the same day. It already is political. Oh my God, you can't politicize this. No, it already is political, so you shouldn't depoliticize it. We're talking about gun deaths in America. The federal government makes gun policy. To say it's not political is an outright lie. Of course it's political. And we already have the most lax gun laws in the modern world. So when conservatives say, well, more guns would have solved this, or we just need fewer gun laws, no, 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 we've already done the empirical test, dipshit. If you compare the U.S., which has the laxest gun laws in the modern world, to other modern nations, we have more gun violence. By a mile! So, what does that mean? It means that you are simply incorrect in your belief system. Because if what you said were true, and the weaker the gun laws, the safer you are, well, then we would already be the safest nation in the modern world. You can't get around this fact because it's a stone-cold fact. And finally, understand, guys, we're not talking about anything extreme here. We're not talking about gun confiscation. If you think that is what we're talking about, you're not fucking listening, and you're strawmanning the shit out of us. So what is Obama talking about, and what am I talking about? This is an issue where I actually happen to agree almost 100% with the Democrats with their original proposal. So they want a universal background check, get rid of the gun show loophole, which allows 40% of gun purchases in America to have no background check associated with it whatsoever. So do a universal background check, limit high-capacity magazines, ban certain kinds of assault weapons, which, you know, can be categorized more easily along with weapons of war and not for sport, and do a gun buyback program. I mean, that's really all we're talking about here. And I give Obama a lot of credit for coming out here and being strong, having a harsh tone, and saying enough is enough. But I need all the other Democrats to wake the fuck up and do the same thing. Get on the same page and hammer this message home on the Sunday shows. All of the polls are on your side. A majority of Democrats, a majority of independents, a majority of Republicans, and a majority of NRA members agree with some of your proposals. Like, for example, the universal background checks. Over 90% of the American people are on that page, so why haven't we gotten it done? We haven't gotten it done because the NRA, who gets their money from the gun manufacturers, specifically the leadership of the NRA, they pay the Republicans to basically block everything. Again, the membership of the NRA is more reasonable. They want background checks. But the leadership of the NRA, they're paying the politicians to do the bidding of the gun manufacturers and block all gun reform, all gun reform. So you know what you do, Democrats? You shame them. You go out on the Sunday shows and you all use the same talking points, which are true, which is over 90% of the American people want a universal background check, and Mitch McConnell and John Boehner blocked it last time we brought it up. Why don't you call your Republican congressman and ask them why they're fascists, why they don't care about what the American people want? This is what you do. You hammer it home. You go to work. You cite specific poll numbers. You let everybody know out there, this isn't a choice, guys. This isn't a debate. We are right, and we are representing you, and the Republicans are wrong, and they are blocking progress, and as a result of what they're doing, more people are going to die. So you crush them with that. You try to get your policy, and then, by the way, if you argue effectively, you also win the next election. But I won't hold my breath, because while this was a great moment from Obama, is this going to continue? I fear it's not going to continue, because every other mass shooting, people get outraged for 2 days to a week max, and then we move right along. That shouldn't be the case. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, got some a story of heroism. We also got Mike Huckabee making an ass of himself. And then later on, we'll get into Alabama and how fucked up they are. And what the U.S. is doing at the U.N., which is really fucking sleazy. Stay right there. Thank you. of a bitch. Welcome back, guys. It is a rainy day in New York. Apparently, we were supposed to maybe get a little bit of that hurricane, but it's actually just hammering the Bahamas, and North Carolina had some flooding and stuff, but it looks like New York will get away with not getting hit. It's ever since Sandy, I'm like, Jesus. Anytime I hear the word hurricane, I'm like, oh, fuck. For the longest time, at least I can't recall being in New York my whole life, I don't remember ever really getting hammered with a hurricane until Sandy. I had lost power for a week during Sandy. So now when I heard another one's coming, I'm like, oh, no, but it looks like it's probably not going to hit. So I tell everybody else feeling it. That sucks, bro. Any of you guys in hurricane territory out there right now in the line of fire, tweet me so I can see you and feel bad for you. But it is rainy. I know this is a random conversation here, and I'm just thinking out loud. I don't dislike rainy days. Is that controversial? I mean, here's what I do hate, though. I hate, like, this time of year in general because it's a transition, at least where I am in New York, from, like, perfect summer weather to now it starts getting just super fall-y weather, and I'm not a big fan of fall. I know a lot of people like it. I don't like it. Then winter can blow a goat. Hate that shit. Then I get happy again spring, summer. So I don't like winter and fall, but I don't mind, like, random rainy days in the middle of the summer. You know what I mean? It's a break from, like, the gorgeous sunshine, which I like most of the time. Did I just spend 5 minutes talking about the weather? As if there's no news to fucking talk about here. There's a lot of news to talk about. All right, let me give you the one bright spot in this horrible story about the shooting. In the midst of all the chaos and the depressing news that came out as a result of the shooting yesterday, there's a story of heroism and courage that came out as well. So 30-year-old North Carolinian and veteran Chris Mintz confronted the shooter before he himself was shot 5 times. Huffington Post says, quote, Mintz, an Army veteran, successfully completed his combat deployment with no serious injuries. Ultimately, he would face the most danger in a small college town. Now, he somehow survived, but he's seriously injured and he's going to have to learn how to walk again. Quote, he blocked a classroom door to keep the gunman at bay. Mercer shot him 3 times. He said, it's my son's birthday today. Mercer then shot him another 2 times. So this guy here is just an absolute hero. I always wonder if I would be capable of having that kind of bravery in the midst of a situation like that. I really don't know the answer to that. I wish I could come out here and be all macho and say, yeah, of course I would. That's the right thing to do. Because it is the right thing to do. There's no question about it. But do we know in that moment if that's how we would react? I don't think any of us know unless or until we're in that moment. And this guy, you know, his true colors showed there, and it stood out, and he just went right into action. So the two officers who took the shooter out as well, they're also heroes, in my opinion. They showed up, and they engaged in a firefight at a certain point, and they were able to take him out. And that's the thing. I mean, look, some people might listen to the show and get the wrong impression that I'm against literally all violence ever, and I'm a committed pacifist. I'm not. I'm not as uber-liberal as Jesus, for example. I believe 100% in violence for self-defense. And here you have officers who showed up, a guy's in the middle of shooting and just killing people, tearing apart the place, and the officers went in there, saw him, engaged in a firefight, and took him out. I don't know those officers' names, but those guys are also heroes. They're absolutely heroes. And the main takeaway from this story here, guys, is that whenever we hear these just heartbreaking, disastrous stories of mass shootings and horrific killers and genocidal maniacs and all that stuff, I don't know about you, but it gets me down a little. I get down. I'm like, fuck, how is that possible that we live on a planet where some people are apparently thinking these kinds of thoughts and then eventually they act on it? It drives me fucking crazy. But the thought that should bring you back up a little bit is understanding that that's not all humans, and that's not human nature, full stop. No, because there are, we're mixed. Human beings are mixed. There's a tremendous variance in human action and human morality. And we exist on a planet where we have guys like this crazy mass shooter. We have guys like Stalin and Hitler. We have guys like al-Baghdadi. We have guys like Osama bin Laden. And we also have MLK. And we also have Malala Yousafzai. And we also have this guy who sprung into action and tried to save people's lives when he saw the shooter. And it's the same thing. There was another story that came out from the recent Taliban shooting in a school, and I think it was Pakistan. There was a teacher who hit all the kids and basically blocked the gunman and took a bullet for the kids, essentially. Now, unfortunately, in that case, the woman died, who was the hero. In this case, he survived. But the bottom line is, don't use horrific events like this to then come to the conclusion, this is what human nature is. Human beings at their core are barbaric, because that's not true. Human being, there is no, at your core, it's a case by, you have to go on a case-by-case basis. Everybody's an individual. And some people at their core are good. Some people at their core are bad. It's a mix. But there's dark in this world and there's light in this world. So never get the misimpression that we're all inherently evil. And I know I brought this up yesterday when I was discussing the same thing. But every time you read philosophers who have debated this throughout history, I always find it to be a false dichotomy. It's a false choice. You know, you have people like Thomas Hobbes who said people are inherently evil, and that's why you need order, and even an authoritarian leader's okay. Or you have people like Rousseau who say people are inherently pretty much good, the noble savage idea, where, you know, it's only, you know, society that might train you to become bad over time. I don't think either one of them are right. I think it depends on what individual you're talking about. It depends on what ideology you are instilled with. But sometimes that doesn't even matter, and you just are what you are at your core. And some people are more prone to violence on a case-by-case basis. Some people are more prone to be good. There is no hardcore, solid answer. It's a nuanced thing. It's a complex thing. And sometimes those answers are uplifting answers. Sometimes it's not an uplifting answer. But in this case, I think there's actually a positive thing to take away, that even though there are some horrible monsters out there, there's always going to be good people as well. All right, next. I got one more on this, and then we'll get off of it. And this one is Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee released a statement attacking Obama for politicizing the mass shooting yesterday, and then he immediately went on to politicize the shooting yesterday. So he said the following, quote, "We hardly know any of the details about this horrific tragedy. What kind of gun was used? How did the shooter obtain it? What is the motive? Does the shooter have a history of mental illness? Was this an act of terror? With few facts, Obama is quick to admittedly politicize this tragedy to advance his liberal anti-gun agenda. For this president to make a political pronouncement is at best premature and at worst ignorantly inflammatory. Obama can shamelessly try and exploit any tragedy he wants, but it's clear that gun-free zones are sitting duck zones." Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a second. Wait a second. Do you see what he just did there? Obama politicizing. You're not supposed to politicize after tragedy. Jesus, man. Let the bodies get cold first. This is because of gun-free zones. You are doing the exact thing that you're accusing him of doing. Now, understand, guys, his point either way is bullshit. Because, as I said before, nobody's politicizing anything. It's already political. So, if anything, some people are trying to depoliticize it when they scream at the left and they say, don't politicize it. No, it's already political. To depoliticize it would be disingenuous. But the difference between Obama politicizing it and Huckabee politicizing it is that Obama is actually right in what he's talking about. Huckabee is a jackass. Now, remember, he's chastising Obama here. Wait for the facts, goddammit. And then he's like, gun-free zone, gun-free zone. Really? All right, well, why don't we actually take a look at the facts of that? Conduct doesn't allow guns. without written authorization. But under Oregon law, the public school, which is what it was, can't ban people with a license from bringing their gun on campus. A 2011 court decision found this, and there indeed was another guy with a gun on campus during the shooting. Come again? So who's the one that fucked up their facts, Mike Huckabee? That would be you. That would be you. Now, he's still not done. He's going to continue to make an ass of himself. Obama can shamelessly try and exploit any tragedy he wants, but it's clear that gun-free zones are sitting duck zones. Okay, we already did that one. His passion is grossly misplaced into destroying the Second Amendment. There were 50 shootings in Chicago the past 2 weekends, and this administration failed to utter a word. All right, let's pause again. Hey, you jackass! When he talks about gun violence, he's come out, what, 6, 7, 8 times and given speeches about gun violence now? It's not like he's exempted Chicago from his criticism while talking about how we need gun reform. No, gun reform would also apply to Chicago, and that would also limit the gun violence. And not only that, it's the Democrats and it's the liberals who have been pushing to one degree or another to end the drug war, which is another thing that would tremendously drop the violence in a place like Chicago. Once you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, guess what? The drug gang violence is going to drop. So it's the liberals who are always talking about the solutions to these problems. But Mike Huckabee's like, why aren't you talking about the solutions to these problems? But he is! You just reject it when he does! And then it always comes back to Chicago. Why? Because what's he trying to do? He's trying to make it about race. He's trying to say, oh, yeah. I mean, sure, whenever there's a mass shooting, he's more than happy to come out and talk about it, and most mass shootings are done by white people. But why isn't he talking about the almost all black violence in Chicago? I wonder why. Well, hey, Mike, also for this shooting, you do know that the guy was half white, half black, right? So he's just – what's so funny is that as he's accusing Obama of trying to bring up his political agenda in response to the shooting, that's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. Now, to the extent that Obama is doing that, he's actually right in what he's proposing as solutions and what he's diagnosing as the problem, whereas Mike Huckabee is a blithering moron. All right, he's not done. Gun violence is a problem in this country, but it's not the fault of the Second Amendment. It's the fault of evil people doing evil things. Yes, but you do know that the tool that they use in the 32,000 gun deaths in America every year is a gun. Now, I know in your crazy Narnia conservative world, you think, well, then they just stab them if that's the case. But you can't get as many people by stabbing them than you can if you got a fucking gun. The fact that they don't acknowledge this and they don't admit this really shows how intellectually dishonest they are. And the final point to make here is, after Sandy Hook, you guys remember what Huckabee did, right? Huckabee went on TV the same day of the shooting, and he said, you know, lack of school prayer brought this about. So again, you accuse Obama of politicizing it when you 100% politicized it. And the key difference is, yet again, when you politicize it, you're actually wrong in the things that you say are the problem and the solutions, like prayer in school. And Obama's actually right when he talks about how sane, moderate gun reform will limit the number of gun deaths. What a pathetic loser he is. All right. Let's move along to Planned Parenthood and how they are really under assault now. I mean, it really is a war on Planned Parenthood. In every way, metaphorically and quite literally. The Associated Press is reporting that another Planned Parenthood facility has been attacked. They say, quote, an arsonist threw a container with flammable liquid through the window of a Southern California Planned Parenthood facility, setting off a small fire. Crews reported the smell of gasoline at the scene of the arson late Wednesday in Thousand Oaks. Thankfully, nobody was inside the building when the flames broke out. Surveillance cameras recorded a suspect wearing a hooded sweatshirt and a face mask. So this is the second attack within a month or so. The last one that we reported on was the arson attack in the state of Washington. But I don't want you guys to worry or anything, because I'm sure this has nothing to do with the debunked Planned Parenthood smear videos, which tries to make them look like genocidal maniacs who are selling baby body parts for profit. Except that's exactly what it has to do with. Those videos came out not that long ago, and after they were released, there's been an uptick of violent attacks on Planned Parenthood clinics. And not only that, there's this kabuki theater political charade going on in Washington right now, where the Republicans are grandstanding and pretending that Democrats and Planned Parenthood do infanticide. And again, there are consequences to your actions. And with the outright lies that are repeated over and over, some people are going to start to believe that Democrats and Planned Parenthood really are doing infanticide and really are doing genocide and really are evil people who want to kill babies. So there are consequences to your actions, which is why it's important that we need to counter their nonsense by bringing up facts. Now, unfortunately, I hate to do this next part here, but I have to do it because I think it's relevant. 2 days before this last Planned Parenthood arson attack, somebody was on TV, and he went way, way, way too far in his attack against Democrats and Planned Parenthood. Let's take a look at that.
Riley is going to turn dark here and pretty dangerous, in my opinion, with an over-the-top bombastic claim and that I hope doesn't have consequences, but the way he's talking, you fear what will happen with what he's saying in the wrong hands. So let's take a look, and then I'll break it down.
Stand up for justice and against inequality and to ensure that every human being is able to live in dignity, because we are all made in the image of God.
The key words there are, every human being is able to live in dignity because we are all made in the image of God. So, Mr. President, are aborted fetuses able to live in dignity? They're not able to live at all, are they? The Pope may not know this, but last Friday, 177 Democrats voted against a House bill that would require American doctors to keep babies born alive during an abortion process from dying. 177 American elected officials, all Democrats, voted for infanticide. We have posted their names on BillO'Reilly.com.
Right after that, a Planned Parenthood was attacked in a terrorist attack. It was an arson. Now, the problem with what he's saying is, I get it, guys. We live in a country, 100%, I believe in free speech. I think I'm a leader in defending it. I don't think you could find a single case where I was against it. The issue here is, when it doesn't require a misinterpretation of the person's argument in order to take action, and in some cases, violent action against said people. And it doesn't require a misinterpretation of what Bill O'Reilly's saying in order for somebody to act out against it. Because what he's saying is the Democrats and Planned Parenthood are for infanticide. They're for the mass killing of babies. So Democrats are for genocide. That's the argument he's making. Now, what is the rational response to that if that were true? If you don't do something about it, you're a moral monster, right? So this doesn't require a misinterpretation or a misperception or, oh my God, they took his argument and they twisted it and then they misapplied it. No, for somebody to do an arson attack against a Planned Parenthood, if they hear that and they believe it, that person's rational. But that's the thing. What Bill O'Reilly's saying is, of course, not true. We went over this the other day, but number one, murder is already illegal, in case you didn't know, Bill, in America, so you can't kill babies. Number two, the specific thing you're referring to is also already illegal, not just under the murder statutes and the murder laws, but also there's a separate law that was passed, which also bans that. But you make it seem like the Democrats were like, no, that we're going to do a whole bill in favor of doing infanticide. No, the Republicans did a dirty trick where they attached this thing, which was already illegal, to a bigger bill, which was defunding Planned Parenthood. And then when the Democrats vote against defunding Planned Parenthood, the Republicans turn around and go, I guess you're for infanticide. It's the oldest political trick in the book. And Bill O'Reilly either fell for it hook, line, and sinker, or he's just a liar. But either way, is this kind of rhetoric attached to an increase in violence and terrorism? I think you can answer that question yourself. You don't need me here to answer that question. And remember, Bill O'Reilly is the same guy who went around saying, Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer, and then somebody murdered, or you can say did a terrorist attack against Dr. George Tiller. So the thing is, guys, this doesn't require mental gymnastics and let me provide an argument as to why what he's doing is directly leading to harm. No, it just is that, the plain face of it, the facts of it. Like I said, it doesn't require a misinterpretation of what he's saying in order for him to be inciting these attacks. It's just flat out what he's saying. So, Bill, reel it the fuck back in, son. Come out and give an apology and say, I was wrong, here's why I'm wrong. If you don't do it, who knows what the fuck is going to continue to happen here? And to all the Republicans putting on this ridiculous show, pretending Planned Parenthood was selling baby parts for profit, you also need to fucking apologize. And come out and say, easy, guys, let's not go crazy here. Don't do attacks. It's actually not true, but they're never going to admit that. The fact-checking organizations had a field day with those bullshit expose videos of Planned Parenthood. The money that's being discussed when they talk about the baby parts, which is really fetal tissue, it's for transportation costs because Planned Parenthood thought these are scientists who want to do medical research to try to cure diseases. So they were lied to. When people showed up who are right-wing hacks, who pretended that they care about science and cures and medicine, and then they get them in a conversation and they twist it to make it look like Planned Parenthood is genocidal and they're selling baby parts for profit when they're doing no such thing. It turns out when you paint the other side as genocidal psychopaths, people want to do violence against them. So maybe you should stop doing it because it's not true. And you guys need to take responsibility for your actions. All right, I got to take a break, but when we come back, we'll get into the Alabama Republicans and what they're doing, and then I got a whole bunch of stuff to squeeze in the last 30 minutes. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Yeah, sure. All right, we're back, guys. Isn't it a shame just how much the Republicans are making our country shitty? I mean, vicious attacks on Planned Parenthood. What's happening with the gun debate? I mean, it's unbelievable. All right. Now we go to Alabama, and it doesn't get any better. Alabama Republicans. That's a special bunch right there. The Republicans have reverted to brazenly cheating in order to try and win elections. According to Raw Story, quote, the state of Alabama, which requires a photo ID to vote, announced this week that it would stop issuing driver's licenses in counties where 75% of registered voters are black. They continue, due to budget cuts, Alabama law enforcement agency said that 31 satellite DMV offices would no longer have access to driver's licenses examiners, meaning that residents will need to travel to other counties to apply for licenses. The move comes just 1 year after the state's voter ID law went into effect. All right, now, understand, guys, that this is directly as a result of what the Supreme Court found in that recent civil rights case and voting rights case. Remember the one where the decision was something akin to, is it the federal government's claim that the South is more racist than the North? They made that point in the decision as if it was like a gotcha against the federal government. Like, come on, those times have changed. The South is no more racist than the North today. We need to get rid of these laws, because the way the Civil Rights Act worked and the Voting Rights Act worked is some places got more scrutiny. The places that had a history of open racism, the federal government would monitor the elections to make sure that it was one man, one vote. Well, now, with the recent Supreme Court decision, they rolled that back. They're like, we can't believe the federal government still thinks the South is more racist than the North. Let's get rid of these laws. What happened immediately after they made that decision? Voter ID laws across the board. So, and voter ID laws are, it's an attempt to try to stop some black voters, some Democratic voters, some poor voters from getting to the polls so that the Republicans can win. It's very similar back in the day to like literacy tests, for example. Remember that? Where they tried to make it seem like, oh, no, we're just testing to see who's smart, and you got to be smart in order to vote, right? I mean, what are you, for stupid people voting? So that's why we have these literacy tests. Then what did they do? They made it so that it specifically targeted black people, and oftentimes they only gave the test to black people, and the white people, they just be like, okay, go ahead and vote. So it's obviously it's an attempt to try to disenfranchise black voters. Obviously, obviously, obviously. But the Supreme Court, in their infinite stupidity, didn't think this was going to happen. It happened immediately. Are they going to reverse this, too? Don't hold your fucking breath, man. And every single DMV office, over 30 of them, every single one that they're shutting down, just happens to be in a black area. What? No, this wasn't coordinated to try to stop blacks from voting because they'll vote Democratic and the Republicans have power now. No, it was a coincidence. That's what it was. It was a coincidence. My ass, man. So a writer for AL.com is outraged by this. He said, quote, it is an affront to the very notion of justice in a nation where one man, one vote is as precious as oxygen. It is a slap in the face to all who believe the stuff we teach the kids about how all are created equal. So roll out the welcome wagon to the Justice Department and tell the world what it already so desperately wants to hear, that Alabama is exactly what they always thought she was. And that's the important part of this, man. I mean, this guy's 100% right. He's from Alabama. And he's like, I can't, this breaks my heart, because all of the stereotypes of like, oh, you're from Alabama, you backwoods southern racist prick, you. He's like, no, yeah, that's right. I mean, they're basically flying a banner, the Republican, the old white racist Republican establishment in Alabama is like, oh, bring back the Confederacy. I mean, what? What? No, DMV offices, budget cuts. We needed budget cuts. It's a coincidence. It was all in black places, and then we did voter ID laws. Coincidence. No, I need all the Democrats, get your shit together, stand up, point this out, argue against them, call them fascists, call them tyrants, say they're the bad guy, frame this debate, and let everybody know so that we can take action against them. I mean, that's what it requires. The Republicans in Alabama at the state level already have power, so you got to find a way to beat back their dominance and their further power grab. In all seriousness, you know what this reminded me of when I read this? Erdogan in Turkey. He's a Muslim fundamentalist, and he basically is against everything Ataturk stood for, and he's pushing Turkey further and further to the right, and he just does power grabs. Like, when he was prime minister in Turkey, the power is designated pretty much to the prime minister. But then when he ran for president, when he was done with prime minister, it's supposed to be more of a symbolic position. He was like, okay, now the president has all the power. That's what this is like with Alabama Republicans. They get power, and they're like, okay, now let's ban blacks from voting so that only white people will vote and we'll continue to win. It's just so pathetic, and it's so brazen. And you know what it is? Another reason I despise it? It's actually anti-intellectual, because the way it's supposed to work in a democracy is, oh, so you want more people to vote for you. Well, give us good policies, give us good arguments as to why you think your vision for the future is the better vision for the future and why it'll benefit everybody, and then we'll vote for you. But they don't even have the pretense of that anymore. I mean, Republicans, there was a while where they at least tried, like Bob Dole, for example. I might not have agreed with the guy, but he tried to make arguments to present a vision to be like, okay, vote for me, and I think I'm the best for reasons X, Y, and Z. Now they just hoist the pirate flag. They're like, no, just ban the other guys from voting. Come up with bullshit laws that ban the other guys from voting, and then pretend like that's not what you just did, and just say, oh, no, we won democratically. I don't know why you guys are so mad at us. I'm mad at you because you don't give a shit about democracy. You don't give a shit about that which is fundamentally American. You don't give a shit about the Constitution. You're racist, and you're power hungry. Gotta stop them Negroes from voting. Come on now. You don't want them getting power. Thems might fight back against us from how fucked up we done been to them. Now we go to the United Nations for some more depressing news. The Netherlands brought up a very important issue at the UN this week. They wanted a full investigation and inquiry into war crimes and human rights abuses in Yemen. Now, this is an issue that we've been talking about for a while now. I feel like two or three times a month we do segments on all the civilians that are killed in Yemen by Saudi airstrikes, U.S.-led Saudi airstrikes with U.S. weapons. But Saudi Arabia blocked it. They blocked the attempted U.N. inquiry into war crimes and abuses in Yemen. And the U.S. didn't do dick about it. So whenever we get on our high horse and we start lecturing people about freedom and democracy and human rights, remember this. Remember this. The Netherlands said, hey, let's look into human rights abuses in Yemen. And the U.S. was like, so let me give you some more details on this. Vice News says, quote, a Dutch-led effort to create a human rights mission for Yemen was abandoned Wednesday amid intense Saudi opposition at the UN, but human rights experts are laying blame in part at the feet of the United States, which failed to vigorously back the Netherlands and may have worked behind the scenes to head off the independent investigation. A Saudi-led coalition has bombed Yemen since late March in an attempt to push back Houthi rebels and their allies and reinstate a Sunni government. The U.S. and U.K., offers logistical support for the coalition in addition to selling billions of dollars in weapons to its members, including Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. U.S. officials say American personnel are also involved in providing targeting assistance for airstrikes, which the U.N. says are responsible for the majority of the more than 2,300 civilian deaths in the conflict in the past 6 months. Okay, so, in other words, not only is Saudi Arabia responsible for all the civilian deaths that are occurring, the U.S. is also responsible. Because we're selling them weapons. Not only are we selling them weapons, we know what they're doing with those weapons and how many innocent people are being killed. We don't care. We're still selling them weapons. And we're also, as they lay out here, we're providing the targets, and then they're bombing the targets. And then, like the other week, we heard they bombed a wedding. Now, at the time, I was actually wrong because I blamed that almost totally on Saudi Arabia. I said we're responsible for the weapons and stuff, but I said they're the ones who bombed the wedding. That's actually not correct. It's the U.S. providing the targets. So Saudi Arabia bombed the targets the U.S. picked out, and it was a fucking wedding. So we're guilty of war crimes here as well. which explains why we weaseled our way out of an investigation into this. So the U.S. really got sleazy on this one. Every time the motion would come up for a vote, the U.S. would do this. And then afterwards, when the media would say, what was up with the Yemen thing? Oh, yeah, no, see, we got to work something out, and we're always on the side of human rights, and I just want everybody to know that there's a compromise to be had here, and we're totally in favor of looking into what's happening in Yemen. And then it would come up again in the meetings, and they'd be like, okay, who's in favor? U.S. would be like, about that. And this would happen over and over. And then at the end, when it was all over, the Netherlands was like, okay, this isn't fucking getting anywhere. We got to drop it. Sucks, but we got to do it. And then afterwards, the White House and Kerry and what's her name? I forget the other one's name. Forgive me for not remembering it. Power? No, might not be that. They were like, oh, yeah, no, we should totally do. We should look into what's happening in Yemen right now and stop the abuse of and the killing of civilians and the human rights atrocities. That should totally be done. And everybody's like, you just fucking blocked it. You didn't say Dickie McGee's axe. Saudi Arabia was coming out against it like a bat out of hell, and the U.S. was like, so they had to drop it. So, I mean, it's just pathetic, and this is why, one of the many reasons why many people hate the U.S. right now, and why polls consistently show, when you ask people around the world, the U.S. is the number one threat against peace, or the number one most violent nation there is. Everybody says the U.S. Why? Because of this. So remember that next time people say, oh, my God, there you go again, blaming the United States. Well, how can you know the facts of this and not blame both Saudi Arabia and the United States? You have to do it, and if you don't do it, you're either ignorant or stupid. All right, next. Benjamin Netanyahu. Oh, boy. Benjamin Netanyahu lectured the UN over the Iran deal, and he had this ridiculous moment where he gave them the silent treatment. Let's watch.
"70 years after the murder of 6 million Jews, Iran's rulers promised to destroy my country, murder my people, and the response from this body, the response from nearly every one of the governments represented here, has been absolutely nothing. Utter silence. Deafening silence.
He's got his mean mug going. How did he think this was a good idea? He's still just ice grilling the room.
Perhaps you can understand why Israel is not joining you in celebrating this deal. If Iran's rulers were working to destroy your countries, perhaps you'd be less enthusiastic about the deal.
Except this deal prevents an attack. This deal prevents an attack. This deal prevents an attack. Is that really hard to fucking get around? See, the problem for Benjamin Netanyahu is that facts exist and people like me look for the facts. That's his problem. Is that there are some people out there that actually give a shit about truth. So what I did is I read the motherfucking deal. I'm fed up to hear with people who want to talk about the deal, but they never read the deal. I never read the deal. I read the article that was written by the people at the place with the agenda who said X, Y, and Z about the deal, and that's my opinion on it. Why don't you fucking read the original deal and see what's happening? If you read the original deal, you go, all right, to be against that is stupid. It's stupid to be against that. Iran reaffirms they will never get a nuclear weapon. Now, you could say, I don't believe them, but it's a good thing this deal is not based on trust and it's not based on your fucking belief. It's based on the IAEA and verification. So that's not a valid counterargument. If you're against this deal, what you're saying is, by definition, I'm against diplomacy. All diplomacy is wrong and I'm against it. So then what are you in favor of? What's the logical conclusion? If the answer is not diplomacy, but you think you have a problem and you got to do something about it, what's the answer? If it's not diplomacy, what is it, Benjamin? Tell me what it is, Benjamin. I don't need you to tell me what it is, because I know what it is, because I read the headlines. Again, I've been looking for the facts on this. How about this? Reuters, quote, ex-defense minister, Netanyahu wanted to attack Iran, but was overruled. The Israeli premier pressed for military operations at least 3 times in recent years, according to Ehud Barak. Oh, who's the violent one again? Who's the one that's actually wanting to start a conflict? Tell me again. You want me to read that for you one more time? No, but see, when he calls for violence, or when he wants to do violence, it doesn't count. Because he's the good guy by definition. So his actions are irrelevant. They're the bad guy, they're the bad guy, they're the bad guy. Now, you guys know, I said it a million times, I'll say it a million more. Am I against it when Iran, or anybody else for that matter, says, death to America, we want to attack Israel? Of course I'm against it, I'm 100% against it. But are you against it when we do it to them? I can't hear you. I can't hear you because you're not fucking against it. You like it when we do it to them. It's just when they dish it back, you go, oh, no, I can't accept that. So, for example, like I just laid out for you, he's repeatedly called for attacks against them. And how about in the U.S., Louis Gohmert calls for bombing them all the time. Now, he's a jackass and he's somewhat irrelevant. So you could put him aside, even though he is a congressman. Duncan Hunter, another congressman, said we should nuke him. Sheldon Adelson, a big money donor, probably more important than those other two congressmen in American politics. He's like, I'd nuke them to show them we mean business. Are you against that? Ted Cruz the other day said, I can't wait to introduce the Ayatollah to 72 virgins. Are you against that? Oh, no, I didn't hear you talking about how, we got to stop the violent rhetoric on our side as well. And, guys, here's the most important point. Netanyahu can actually back up his aggression. The Iranians can't. I don't give a fuck what anybody in the media tells you. They have a rinky-dink military budget compared to Israel and compared to the United States. So the idea that they're going to somehow, you know, be aggressive and launch an attack against Israel or against the United States and, you know, they're going to try to take us down, utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. They don't have the ability to, and they know they'd be gonzo if that were to happen. They know immediately not only would Israel respond, the U.S. would respond, and it's good night for their entire thing they got going on. So he can back it up. They can't back it up. So who's the real threat here? I repeat myself. Iran signed the peace deal, has abided up to this point with the temporary peace deal. Every step of the way, they've shown that they're good actors. And it's Netanyahu all along who said, I don't care that they said they want peace now. I'm still against them, and oh yeah, I tried to attack them 3 times. I think I know who the bigger threat is here, Netanyahu. And you're not going to like the answer. Okay. All right, now we go to Vice. I got to hurry up here, man. I'm running out of time. As fucking always. Vice has some good news for weed smokers. They report, quote, the results from the first and longest study ever conducted on medical cannabis use for chronic pain management are finally in, and medical pot is safe to use. Shocker. The study was conducted by researchers at McGill University in Montreal and followed 215 experienced smokers as they toked up 2.5 grams a day, as well as 216 non-smokers for 4 years between 2004 and 2008 with a follow-up after 1 year. The participants, who all suffered from a wide range of chronic pains, were tested for lung function, underwent blood tests, and had cognitive abilities like memory examined. All adverse effects, from mild headaches to serious disorders, were reported by subjects. In a paper describing the results of the study, published Tuesday in the Journal of Pain, the researchers write that cannabis users reported less pain, better overall moods, and had no increased risk of serious adverse effects compared to the control group. Now, they go on to explain that there were minor inconveniences, you could say, like some respiratory issues because they're smoking, but that can be remedied by using the vaporizer as opposed to smoking it like most people would smoke weed. So there's an answer to that, and they say other minor things, like some people would get dizzy every now and then, but overall, the quality of life of the people who were smoking weed to deal with chronic pain versus the people who weren't, it was much better for the people who were. So the takeaway from this is, now you could say, hey, it needs a little bit more study. Maybe, maybe not. I'm kind of convinced already, but even if we do more study, I think the main takeaway is going to be, if we were so inclined, it would make sense for marijuana, for some patients, to be used for chronic pain in the same way that one would use Vicodin or Percocet or other opiates for it. Now, I'm not your typical leftist who loves to bash opiate drugs because they're made by the evil pharmaceutical company, so therefore they must be bad. I'm not that guy. I think opiates have helped many people. Sure, some people get addicted, they overdose, and there's problems with it, no doubt. But I think the overwhelming majority of people who use it either to treat pain or they can use it recreationally as a drug, and it's fine. So I'm not going to bash it, but I do think people should have the fucking option. There are some people who, they react poorly to opiates, and that's a fact of reality, so they should have the option. A guy like me would choose opiates over marijuana all day long, but other people would want marijuana over opiates, and why shouldn't they have that choice if both are going to relieve pain? So the main takeaway is, if you guys already didn't know, there are plenty of medical uses for marijuana, including treatment of chronic pain, as we see here. And to go a step further, which you all knew I was going to do, it should also be legal just for recreational use, because radicals like me actually believe in this thing called, what is it again? Oh, yeah, freedom. All right, now we got to go to Joe Rogan. This will probably be the last one, but maybe we'll squeeze in Pat Robertson too. Joe Rogan had Breitbart writer Milo Yiannopoulos on his podcast, and they got into a pretty heated back and forth on the issue of Christian values.
Damn it, everywhere that doesn't have a strong Christian heritage is a fucked up place with bad morals. That's a ridiculous statement. That's a ridiculous statement. Everywhere that doesn't have Judeo-Christian values is a fucked up place.
I think that, yes, I think it should be perfectly reasonable, respectful thing to say. Our culture is better. I believe our culture is better.
Our
everywhere
culture,
else in the
world,
culture of Christians,
I think European
and
European
ketamine,
European
each other.
European and American culture, which is based on Judeo-Christian values, is better than other cultures. I think it's uncontroversial to say so. But what's based on Judeo-Christian values about being a good person?
Ultimately,
it has nothing to do with the
right and wrong
comes from the Bible. What?
It does.
What comes from the Bible?
Ultimately, our sense of right and wrong comes from the Bible.
Our sense of right and wrong.
I think
there's the only way that a person could have ethics and morals and treat each other well.
I didn't say
don't you think that people
understand what's good
and what's bad? Listen, if we're going to have a conversation, we can't keep talking over each other like this. When someone's trying to make a point about something that's complex like this, if you think that the only way for a person to have ethics or an understanding of each other or compassion for each other is to rely on ancient myths that are easily scientifically disproved.
Choppy. Let me give that a second there.
Well, that's what Christianity is.
No, I didn't say that.
I said the
specific set of values that you have is influenced more than you would like to admit by your Judeo-Christian values.
It's influenced by
there
a
are certain things that I think all of us have.
What you are.
I mean,
like,
I might take it to extreme.
Who you are. But who you are. Being a gay
that's
man.
Who I am.
That's
how I behave. That's what I do.
But this is prohibited in the Bible.
Yes, but I agree that it would be better if I didn't behave like this. And if I could
do you really?
Be homosexual, I would
self-loathing
do so.
Homosexual.
No, I wouldn't have this. You need to read a wonderful essay by Brayton.
No, I don't need to read shit. I need to know what the fuck you're saying.
Okay, so Brayton
because
goes,
what you're saying is who you are is
it's prohibited in the Bible.
You are, because I don't think my sexuality is an important component.
It's a huge part of you. You talk about it all the time.
Right.
It's a massive part of what we've talked about on the show.
I think...
it comes up anytime you want to make a funny point. It comes up anytime you want to define your sexuality or your urges or your decadence.
I think people leap to it because I think it's you. Well, I think people leap to the most different thing about themselves, the most unusual thing about themselves, anytime they want to be funny or be, black. That's why black comedians talk about being black a lot. Chris Rock always talks about, blacks and the N-word. It's why, Muslim comedians only ever talk about Islam. It's, gay comedians talk about being gay. I think that's, you go to that because it's the most different funny thing about you. And it's a sort of a form of laziness, I suppose. So I don't know if that's particularly relevant, but...
Listen, it's absolutely relevant.
Well, they can make a joke out of it, but it's
death in a lot of cultures.
Well, in Muslim cultures, not in ours. It's only the Muslim world that does that now. It's 11 countries.
They're the last ones that continue the grand old tradition of killing gay people. But that shit's been around forever. I mean,
well,
what does it say in the Bible about a man lying with another man?
I think if I could choose, I wouldn't be homosexual.
Really?
That doesn't make me self-loathing.
So if someone came out of the pill, Pfizer
came out of the pill,
it certainly fucking
straight.
Does.
No, it doesn't.
You
no,
don't
it
think
doesn't.
It makes you self-loathing
Absolutely
to
not.
Hate a part of what you
I
are?
I don't hate a part of what I am. I love all of me, but if I could choose to be even better, then I would be.
So you'd be better if you were straight?
Yes.
Wow.
Anybody would be.
If
any gay person would be better if
they
were straight.
Came along and had an anti-gay pill,
yeah,
you would take it.
Well, it would be career suicide, but I probably would, yeah.
So you want to change the fact that you're gay because you don't think it's equal to being straight, but nobody's allowed to call you a self-hater or a self-loather. If that's not self-hatred, I don't know what is. You know how somebody who doesn't self-hate would answer that question? No, I'm perfectly fine with being gay, and I'd stay gay. But you didn't answer like that. You want to know why? Because you self-hate. Because Joe Rogan's 100% right. So to the idea that Christian culture is superior. As he said, everywhere that doesn't have Judeo-Christian values is fucked up. Two words. The space. The space isn't one of the words, by the way. Enlightenment. The Enlightenment. Christian culture was the Inquisition, the Crusades, burning witches, trying to pray away the Black Plague and other diseases. And then Christian was beaten over the head and into submission by modernity and secular liberal values and science. Have you not heard of the Enlightenment? I find it hilarious when people try to credit Judeo-Christian values or Christianity for all of the progress made by the Enlightenment. Judeo-Christian values, by the way, let's get into specifics on that. What exactly are Judeo-Christian values? Because they never go into the specifics. They just want to use that as a blanket statement and then move along. Like, oh, Judeo-Christian values, credit that for everything good ever today, and now let's move along to the next part of the conversation. No, let's stop and think about it. Judeo-Christian values, basically what that means is if you take the Bible, the most direct literal interpretation of the Bible would be, okay, you have to be extremely, extremely nonsensically socially conservative and extremely, extremely nonsensically economically liberal. Jesus was a Marxist before Marxism was a thing. He was flat out anti-rich, just anti-rich. So are you on that page, Milo? I'm curious. And are you also on the page of the extreme social conservatism? So, for example, as we've discussed before on the show, if you really believe in biblical law, well, then you should be out there protesting the existence of fish markets. Because all shellfish, it's an abomination in the eyes of God to eat shellfish. There's your Judeo-Christian values. Or how about the fact that in the Bible, it's an abomination if women teach men anything. So you should be starting a movement to ban women from being teachers in schools. Ban women from teaching anything. Again, it's in the Bible. Judeo-Christian values. This is what we're talking about here. Or how about the fact that polygamy is the most common form of marriage in the Bible? Are you pro-polygamy? How about the fact that slavery is in the Bible? How about the fact that they have outright unscientific horse shit, like they talk about the earth having four corners? What kind of earth would have four corners? Let's think about it. Oh, a flat earth. This is the book you want to base society on? Or how about the part, there's a part of the Bible where daughters rape their father because they want kids, and they get them drunk and they rape them. Biblical values, hashtag biblical values. And naturally, there's the ban on shaving. Hey, Milo, you look kind of clean-shaven there. But then again, he's also gay, so I guess he's openly sinning. and a mix of two different fabrics. It's an abomination to wear that. Should we put people to death because they wear a mix of two different fabrics? If you actually read the Bible, the values in there are fucking horrendous. So to credit the Bible with, oh, come on, this is why we've become better, it's just absurd. And in conclusion, I'll say this. When he makes the point, as he did at the beginning, that everywhere that doesn't have Christian values is a fucked up place. No, the places that exist today that are the most non-religious in the modern industrial world happen to be the places that have the highest standard of living and quality of life. People in Scandinavia, which has the highest rate of atheism and agnosticism and secularism in the modern world, they have empirically the best healthcare systems, the best social safety nets, they self-report being the happiest. We can go down a list of all these different things where they're kicking the ass of a place like the United States of America, which is an officially secular government, to be clear, but over 70% of the population describes themselves as Christian. So bottom line is, you're just wrong, Milo. You're just wrong. And if anybody takes a look at the evidence, that's the only conclusion you can take away from this. Joe is 100% right, and you're wrong. Okay. All right, guys, we're out of time. I love you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Mwah. Peace.